Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. So they say you can't plan for the unexpected, but whoever said that obviously didn't know about Aflac. You probably know the Aflac Duck, but you might not know what Aflac can do for you. For example, did you know they pay cash that can help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover? If you get sick or injured, Aflac pays cash that can be put towards copays and deductibles to even non-medical expenses like rent or your mortgage payments. It's completely up to you. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit aflac.com to learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with the very generous Stephen Moss, the BBC producer and author of 10 Birds That Changed the World. This next story took my breath away. It's about something humble called the sparrow. We have sparrows everywhere. They sing. This is the tree sparrow, and it's the tree sparrow of Asia, the tree sparrow of China, the People's Republic of China. In December of 1958, Mao Zedong, the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, declared four vermins must be wiped out: rodents, mosquitoes, flies, and the tree sparrow. What follows is astonishing. Stephen, I want to make sure, rodents, mosquitoes, flies, and sparrows, they're not the same thing. But focusing on the sparrow, what kind of sparrow? What did it look like?
It's a bird actually found in Britain. We are used to the house sparrow, which you, of course, have in the United States because it was brought there by mistake. This is a close relative of that. It's not related to the American sparrows, really. It's a seed-eating bird. It was very common in China, in rural and urban areas. Now, what you have to remember about Chairman Mao is, even compared to other dictators like Stalin and Hitler and, dare I say, certain former US presidents, one of the problems with Mao is that he had absolute power. I mean, all dictators are powerful, but he took it to a different level. So when he told 650 million Chinese people to go out and kill the sparrows because they were eating the grain, so he was hoping that by killing the sparrows, the harvest would be bigger, they'd lose less grain, which sounds quite logical, they obeyed him and they went out and did it. The problem he didn't understand, and he was told it very soon afterwards, but he chose to ignore it, was that sparrows, like a lot of seed-eating birds, feed their youngsters, their chicks, on insects. So the following year, when all the sparrows had been killed, there were no, and when we say sparrows, people probably killed most small birds because they're not going to be starting to identify whether it's a sparrow or not. What happened was that the insects had a massive population boom and ate all the harvest. And the figure is disputed, but it is potentially as many as 45 or 50 million Chinese people died in the following year or two from famine. That is more than died globally in the entire First World War. So this is the worst human-created disaster in global history. And yet, as you said to me when we were chatting earlier, most people don't know about this.
I didn't know, and I read a great deal about the People's Republic of China because of the threat here in the 21st century. Let me go through the logic here, if I understand it. The sparrows were not vermin. They were just urbanized. They live in the countryside. They live in the cities. The cities at this time were not dominant in the People's Republic of China. It was a rural population. They lived and died with sparrows. The opinion of the Chinese peasants, the people who lived in the country, was you only eat sparrows during times of famine. There's the irony in all directions here, Stephen.
Yeah. And I had this extraordinary meeting, which I describe in the book. I met a half-English, half-Chinese woman called Esther Chow Ying, who was there in 1958-59 and worked for the English language radio station in what is now Beijing, Peking. And she said, this is a stupid idea. We shouldn't kill the sparrows. It's going to end in tears. She was not quite the only person who said that, but one of a tiny minority. Esther still lives. I spoke to her grandson yesterday. Esther is still thriving at the age of 91, lives in North London, and is just a remarkable, delightful, and extraordinary woman who basically contradicted Chairman Mao. And you did not do that.
Yeah.
And she did, and she lived to tell the tale. And of course, as one of her colleagues said many years later, she said, "I was right, wasn't I?" And the colleague said, "You were right, Esther, but at the wrong time," which is a very, you know, concerning comment, because of course people contradict dictators. They have doing it now in Iran, for example, and they get arrested, they get killed, you know, even though they're right. And this is, you know, this is, she was extraordinary and she survived, but many, many millions of people did.
Yes, let's talk to two ornithologists who were at the Peking National History Museum. They're the ones who were responsible for making this connection right away. 1958, yes. They made it, Zhu and Cheng. They were, Cheng is the founder of Chinese ornithology today. They were at the academy, and they had a sparrow stomach open, and they saw it was mostly insects. So they made the connection, and they took it to the authorities, thinking the authorities would not just reward them, but would understand how dangerous this was. And instead, I don't know, were they they were persecuted. They were.
Yeah, they lost their jobs. They were sent to rehabilitation camps. You know, they were treated appallingly. And you know, they did survive and they did get through. But as you say, you know, this is what happens in dictatorships. This is what is happening, I'm afraid to say, in America now. And it's happening in Britain now, that it's no use being right. We are saying to our government, you need to deal with the climate crisis. People are saying that in America. Probably the majority of people in America and Britain think this, and yet governments, for whatever reason, don't want to hear. And that was Mao's problem. No one actually, of course, no one dared go to Mao and say, look, these two scientists have proved that we mustn't do this, because they would have lost their jobs. You know, this is the problem with fear, problem with governments of fear.
I also read into this, Stephen, something else about the public. Because once they were given this direction by Mao, they threw themselves into it with a fever that's not rational.
Yes.
You cited there was one young man who was rewarded in the newspapers because he'd strangled 20,000 sparrows.
Yeah.
That's nutty.
It's insane. And most of the birds weren't killed actually by shooting them or strangling them. They were mostly killed, particularly in cities, by people going around for 2 days and two nights bashing pots and pans and, you know, blowing trumpets and making a noise. And the sparrows would fly up every time they found a flock of sparrows, and they're a very sociable bird. They would fly up in the air, and they literally, after 2 days, they died. You know, they were exhausted. They fell to the ground in their thousands. And it shows just how quick it is. This wasn't something that took 6 months or a week even. It was really a few days. And yeah, people like that man did that, but the consequences, you know, it is
right.
Heartrending to read. I'm sorry, you know, people reading this book, there are some very positive stories in this book, and there are some very positive outcomes, but that story, I think, is the best story in the book, and it's the one that is the most awful. Really.
Well, it is Maoism, and Maoism hasn't left us, Stephen. So let's go to Australia again. Remember, everything is exotic and will try to kill you. Not the emu. What is an emu?
Emu is basically the second or third largest bird in the world after the ostrich. It depends. It's taller than a cassowary, but not as heavy. So it's one of these big flightless birds, really big, you know, as tall as a human being.
60 kilograms. Good heavens. It can run 50 kilometers per hour.
Yeah, it's a terrifying bird. And what happened was that emus live, they're nomadic, because like a lot of creatures in Australia, they have to follow the rains. You know, food is not necessarily in the same place at the same time. And what happened in Western Australia, this is a sub-story in the tree sparrow story, partly for humour, actually, because it's a very funny story, that in the 1930s, a whole load of soldiers, Australian soldiers from the First World War, who were on hard times, were given houses and land in Western Australia, effectively on the edge of the desert, so that, you know, they could be compensated and so that they would you know, start up a new economy there. And what happened was the emus came in one day, big, large numbers of this very sociable bird, net all the crops. So the Australians sent the army in to kill them all with machine guns, only it didn't work because the emus were very clever and they would split and they would, you know, it's almost like they were, you know, like a proper army does, you know, uses tactics and strategy. And the emus won the war. It's called the Emu Wars. It's the only example of a bird winning a war against human beings. And it's a great story.
Do the Australians admit to this, Stephen?
Oh, they did. No, to be fair on the Australians, they did. I mean, there's a famous story that one of the MPs stood up and said, well, we do need, of course, we should be giving the soldiers, the human soldiers who fought in this war, medals, campaign medals, because you always get a medal, as you know, if you fight in a war. And another man stood up and said, if we're going to give any medals at all, let's give them to the emus, because they won.
It's a wonderful story. It's a way of dealing with the foolishness of mankind when he examines the forest or the desert and says, maybe we can interfere, maybe we can intervene. And the intervention in China is the great leap forward. That mass murder was direct consequence of Mao intervening in Mother Nature. You report that the next year they imported 250,000 tree sparrows from the Soviet Union in order to reestablish the ecosystem. Extinction is the term. Climate crisis is upon us. Stephen Moss is the author. 10 Birds That Changed the World. We're turning next to the snowy egret and the emperor penguin. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What if every student had a tutor and personalized learning was available to everyone? What if every family had a financial guide and their investments made for an optimistic future? What if every doctor could diagnose you in seconds and healthcare visits felt more personal? What if your business never slept and every customer's shopping experience felt like it was designed especially for them? It can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.